From Iowa Public Radio News, this is The Exchange. I'm Alex Hoyer, in for Ben Kiefer. Today we're talking about hunting in Iowa and why the number of hunters in the state is declining. There are quite a few reasons, but the consequences have meant less revenue for the state and a decrease in funding for wildlife programs. First, we'll examine how access to land is affecting hunting, and later in the show, we'll talk about some of the other reasons why fewer people are wearing Blaze Orange. Then we'll explore potential ways to encourage participation and access to the sport. Are you a former hunter, or do you hunt less than you used to? We want to hear your story. That's coming up on The Exchange, right after this news from NPR. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Alex Hoyer, in for Ben Kiefer. Today we're talking about hunting in Iowa and why the number of hunters in Iowa is declining. There are many reasons, and some of them are complicated, but a few of the outcomes could be less revenue for the state and a decline in funding for wildlife programs. We'll talk about those trends in a moment, but first, Iowa Public Radio's Janine Beck examines why access to hunting land is declining. Starting tomorrow, the Department of Natural Resources will begin selling extra deer licenses to out-of-state hunters. The licenses are typically a hot commodity, and that's despite complaints that there's not enough land in Iowa open for hunting. Janine Beck takes a look at the lengths to which hunters will go to find a place to hunt and what the state is doing to improve access.
4 years ago, Jim Woolley purchased a 240-acre farm just north of the Sheraton River. Most of the property is in the Wetland Reserve Program, soggy, grassy ground no longer suitable for farming. A tree break runs through the center of the property, and on either side, Woolley is restoring native prairie.
There's switchgrass over here, goldenrod coming up there, so just a whole host of plants that are beneficial to wildlife and to insects here. And if you look out across, you can see butterflies kind of everywhere here. And if there's butterflies there, that means there's lots of bugs, and it means that, you know, pheasants and little quail chicks are going to have something to eat.
Woolley's also planted small patches of corn and soybeans to serve as food plots for deer. His interest in wildlife habitat is twofold. He's the director of field operations for the Quail Division of Pheasants Forever and an avid hunter.
One of the reasons that I ended up buying the farm is, you know, I'd hunted with a bunch of guys for years and years and years. And over time, land ownership patterns changed. Farms changed hands and got to the point where we just didn't have enough area to hunt anymore. And we were active hunters, and I could kind of see this coming down the road. And so I thought, I've always kind of wanted a place, and I started looking.
A national expert on hunting says Woolley is part of a growing trend. More and more hunters are buying or leasing land or joining private clubs to ensure access. Mark Damian Duda is the executive director of Responsive Management, a research firm that specializes in natural resource and outdoor recreation issues.
There really is an income issue here. Hunting on private lands, if you're leasing or whatever, or joining a club, it can get expensive. And so what I would not want to see happen with hunting across the U.S. is that it becomes a rich man's sport. America was founded on open access to wildlife resources for everyone.
In a 2009 survey, 69% of Iowa hunters agree it's difficult to find a place to go. This spring, the legislature voted to require the Department of Natural Resources to study whether more public land should be open for hunting. The state owns about 350,000 acres, 80% of which is already available. But DNR biologist Peter Fritzell says last year's survey shows the majority of hunters prefer private land.
Public lands, especially on opening weekends, can be very crowded. And that may be the type of situation that the hunter does not want to encounter. Alternatively, though, if you go to those same public areas on a weekday, they'd be devoid of hunters.
Fritzell says the reality is 98% of property in Iowa is privately owned. So the agency is studying ways to entice private owners to allow hunting. In Kansas, they receive a small payment from the state. Nebraska, the Dakotas, Wyoming, and Montana all have similar programs. Fritzell says while interest among Iowa property owners has been mixed, hunters looking for more places to go are solidly behind the idea. In Millerton, I'm Janine Beck, Iowa Public Radio News.
And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. Thanks to Janine for that report. Later in the hour, I'll be joined by Willie Succi, a wildlife research supervisor for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And I'll be joined by Western Iowa's regional representative for Pheasants Forever, John Lindquist. But first, I'm joined by John Quintus. He's the fire chief for the Ventura Volunteer Fire Department. That's in North Iowa, just west of Mason City. Welcome to the program, John.
Well, thank you.
Now, I understand that the fire department there in Ventura holds a pancake breakfast every year on the opening day of pheasant hunting season and has done so for quite some time. Tell us a little bit about the attendance over the years at that event.
Yeah, we've done this for, well, I've been on the fire department for 18 years, and they were doing it when I started. When I first originally got on the department, it was really a big deal. Early in the morning, you would have just an onslaught of hunters waiting at the door to come in. And like this last year now, in fact, we probably had a handful that came through. It actually ends up being more of a community fundraiser, just the local residents coming and eating breakfast more so than it is the hunters anymore.
Mm. How would you describe the economic impact of hunting in Ventura?
It's a huge thing for Ventura. I mean, the slogan out in front of the town says Sportsman's Paradise. On the sign for the town, so it's a big deal around there. However, we're noticing that at least the hunters, they're just not as prevalent, it seems like, at pheasant season any longer like they used to be.
So how has the decline in the hunters, which I assume affects the economy in Ventura, how has that affected the community there, if at all?
For us, ourselves anyway, financially it hurts because you don't have the number of people coming through to serve, you know, and a lot of for the breakfast. So there was lost revenue in that aspect. A lot of times the guys would come back even at lunchtime because we'd serve until like 2 in the afternoon. They'd see the same faces again at lunchtime. They'd eat a quick bite then and go back out hunting, and you just don't see anymore. So it's definitely a lost revenue for us.
Give us an idea of the number of people. You said a few. How many people were we talking about at, let's say, last year's opening day compared to maybe with what happened 10, 15 years ago?
Oh, I would venture to say, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you would see 200, 250 hunters come through, and I would say we were down last year probably to 50.
What do you think?
It's a noticeable difference.
What do you think is the key to possibly reversing the trends of declining participation?
Yeah, I don't honestly, you know, that's a tough question. I don't know what the answer is there. I don't know if it's, you hear the guys come through comments about lack of birds, harder to find, and a lot of times it depends on the season. If the crops aren't out, you know, the birds are really hard to flush up and have access to them.
All right. Well, John Quintus, the fire chief for the Ventura Volunteer Fire Department in North Iowa, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Now we're going to Andy Long. Andy is department manager of the Hunting and Fishing Department at Jack's Outdoor Gear in Ames. Welcome to you, Andy.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the business there, trends maybe you've been noticing in the number of hunters that have come in to buy supplies.
What you see is over the past few years, like was just stated, there have been fewer and fewer hunters going out into the woods. And I think a lot of that, there's many reasons that that's happened, but there has been a steady decline in the pheasant population. Excuse me, I got a cold. There's also been a loss of access to land in the state for the general public to hunt, whether it's on private or public. And so getting access to game permission to hunt has been tougher.
Mm-hmm. How expensive is hunting? I'm sure it varies depending on what you're hunting, but for the average person, maybe, how expensive is it to hunt?
It all depends on what you're hunting. If you're hunting pheasants, basically just need a gun, dog, some clothing, some ammo, license. But if you get into the some of the others, like waterfowl hunting, you start purchasing decoys and bunch of other big things that cost more money. So,
So about how much do you think it'd be, or is it really too difficult to put an actual dollar amount on it?
Oh, it is. I mean, your hunter is going to go out and just buy one gun, two guns, whatever. So I mean, that's just a one-time fee. But the more you hunt, the more ammo you need, the more guns you need to purchase, bows you need to purchase, the more gear you need to purchase. So just depends on how much you're wanting to do.
Mm-hmm. What is Jack's Outdoor Gear there in Ames? What, if anything, is the business they're doing to perhaps encourage people to hunt?
What they need to do, we need to get more kids involved into the great outdoors. Today's society, there's just fewer and fewer kids getting involved in hunting and fishing and anything involved in the outdoors. Jack's puts on Kids Fishing Day every spring up at Ada Hayden Lake in the city of Ames. But there just needs to be more people willing to take kids hunting and fishing and get them involved, as there's just kids are sitting around watching TV and playing video games far too much.
Yeah, and you make personal attempts with your family to encourage hunting. I believe you have a son.
Yeah, I've got two boys. I've got a 3-year-old and a 10-month-old. The 3-year-old, he went out with me probably 8-10 times last year duck hunting, and he gets to learn a whole bunch of different life values, not just the thrill of the kill, but the seeing the sun come up and learning how to set decoys and respect for nature. So.
And is that much the same way that you got involved in hunting when you were a child?
Yeah, I actually didn't get into it till about middle school. My dad used to hunt, but then when we came along, he kind of gave it up. But when we showed interest in it, he decided that he would re-involve in hunting and fishing, and he took us and showed us how to hunt and how to fish, and it's just something that needs to be passed on by everybody, and it's not getting that way right now. So
why is it something that you think that needs to be passed on to your son? What is it about hunting that makes it very valuable to you?
It teaches you a lot of different life lessons. Well, like I said, respect for the environment. It gives kids a great way of learning how to take care of the environment and picking up your mess that you take out there and not just littering everything, but completely taking care of all of nature. So,
All right. Well, Andy Long, Department Manager of the Hunting and Fishing Department at Jack's Outdoor Gear in Ames, thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. In just a moment, I'll be joined by Willie Succi, a wildlife research supervisor for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and also John Lindquist, Western Iowa's regional representative for Pheasants Forever. You're listening to The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. We're back in just a bit. Welcome back to The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. For the rest of today's show about the decline of hunting in Iowa, I'm joined by two guests. First, John Lindquist. He's Western Iowa's regional representative for Pheasants Forever. Hi, John.
How you doing today?
I'm well, thank you.
Good.
I'm also joined by Willie Succi, a wildlife research supervisor for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. We'd also like to invite you to the conversation. Have you or someone you know stopped hunting in the past few years? Tell us why. Does it relate to the access to land, the expense, the weather? Tell us your story. Give us a call at 1-866-780-9100. That's 866-780-9100. You can send us an email at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, and we're on Twitter at IPRTalk. I want to start with you, Willie. Starting very broadly, what is the overall economic impact of hunting in the state of Iowa?
Well, every 5 years, the Fish and Wildlife Service does a survey that estimates that. In 2006, the economic impact in Iowa was roughly about $470 million.
Mm-hmm. And is that more than it's been recently?
It's been trending downward over the last probably 20 years.
Mm. So what are the numbers that really show us that there's a decline? Is this an extremely steep decline or just a very short decline?
Well, nationally and in Iowa, it's kind of a gradual decline. Over the last 20 years, we've probably seen about a 20% reduction in the number of people hunting. And if you look at from 2000 to 2009, we've actually seen about a 7% decrease in the number of hunting licenses that we've issued.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the show, in Janine Beck's piece, we heard that one of the reasons why hunting is declining is because there is less access to land in the state. What are your thoughts, if any, on that?
Well, I think that's accurate. I think a number of states have looked at these issues, and that there's about three things that come out that are really impacting what happens out there. One is the number or amount of time that people have available. A lot of people have commitments to work and family obligations, and that's probably the big thing that impacts them. And closely behind is, do they have access to a place to hunt or enough places to hunt? Because if sometimes just having one place to go isn't enough to motivate somebody to go out and go hunting, they want to have a choice or two.
Mm. Calling us now is Terry from the Quad Cities. Welcome, Terry.
Hi.
What would you like to contribute to today's program?
Well, I've got plenty of places to hunt. My biggest problem is having birds in those places. The habitat is just not there anymore. I mean, places that used to be really good are just terrible now. Mm-hmm. And I know the state's not completely responsible, but they're not helping much either. I mean, I'm an out-of-stater, and they really charge an arm and a leg to go hunting over there for pheasants that aren't there anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think... And they raised the fishing license again the other day, And I was born in Iowa, so I enjoy coming over to Iowa to hunt, but I haven't hunted for 2 years because there's just no birds.
Mm-hmm. So is it more that it's that the birds are not there or that it's too expensive?
It's more the birds are not there. I work at John Deere, so I could afford to go if I wanted to, but I'm not going to spend all the time and money and effort if there's no birds. Mm. And I'm not going to shoot the last bird off my farms I have. I mean, I'm just not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for your call today, Terry.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you had the show on.
Great.
Thanks.
Now I want to introduce John. Well, we all already said hi to John, but John with Pheasants Forever in Western Iowa. Has Pheasants Forever been tracking the decline in the number of birds? We just heard from Terry about not being able to find birds anymore.
Right. And that's a common theme across the state right now. It's not really regionalized to certain areas, but in the mid-70s we harvested around 1.9 million pheasants and dropped down into the mid-80s. It was 1.4. Mid-90s were 1.4 million birds. So, it was holding relatively consistent there for the 20-30 years, but last year we harvested about 383,000. So we go from 1.9 million to 383,000, and he's exactly right. Habitat is the key to a lot of our woes, that and Mother Nature. We've had a 100 year flood and a 500 year flood in the last 10 years. We've had a couple of the worst winters in state history. Last month was the wettest June ever recorded. Those kind of Mother Nature issues really play into bird populations, even if there is better habitat on the landscape. But, the ag producers are doing what they do best, and they're being asked to do, and they're out there, creating food for the world. And the opportunity for marginal acres to be enrolled into habitat have been slim. We've been being pushed by poor rental rates, and it's just been tough to compete with ag production. So the thing that suffers first is, our birds and our water quality and our soil erosion. Those are the first three things that go. And unfortunately, someone who does live out of state, if they're going to spend the money to buy the non-resident license and make the travel and pay for the hotels and food and gas, they want some enjoyment out of doing that. So mm-hmm. I see why the trend is going down.
Mm-hmm. And Willie Succi with the DNR, what do you have to say about this increase in the fees, increase in the licenses? Is that just something that's necessary?
Yeah, the reason that we have fees and what the fees are used for is to fund the Conservation Act work for fisheries, wildlife, and enforcement out there. And so we don't try to raise fees unless we really have to provide the programs that we hope the Iowans enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now by phone is Dave from Norwalk. Dave, welcome to the exchange today.
Good afternoon. My point is that it seems to me as we're selling our kind of heritage down the tubes, I mean, I understand ag production, but even when there's not ag production, land isn't considered for wild areas. It's just turned over to kind of really poorly planned developments all across the state that probably shouldn't be where they are, because a lot of them are in wetlands or the land is modified to such a point. And, you know, for my money, I wouldn't come and hunt here either. I mean, there's more wild lands in New Jersey and New York than there are in Iowa. It's a fairly landlocked state due to agriculture, but it seems to me we waste, we actually, you know, we as hunters should be the most conservation-minded. And, you know, as a population, we say, well, that's the realm of the tree hugger. That's the realm of the ecologist. But, you know, if our land is gone, it's gone. Whether, you know, I mean, I live in Norwalk. You can go around the Des Moines area, and even in, say, some of the newer developments in West Des Moines, which all used to be wild area, not all of it was planted, but even the ones that are, you know, there's declining suburbia out there. So, you know, in 10 or 15 years, these unplanned communities that, you know, where there's no coordination throughout the state, where there's no look toward the future or our children's future, you know, we'll just be there. The land will be dead. It won't be used for farming because, mm-hmm. yeah. you know, the farmers are selling it, their land as fast as they can to developers. And then sure. maybe roads are put in. And the problem is, you know, you tend to think of clear cutting mm-hmm. in timber states, but that seems to be the mentality here. Just go and bulldoze it, clear cut it, and save it for a rainy day.
Okay, Dave, I think we have your point.
Bye.
Thank you so much for the call. John Lindquist, we have to take a break in just a minute here, but our guest Dave mentions that about the environmental connection between hunters and conservation, and I think that might be one of the misperceptions about hunters, is that oftentimes some of your most avid conservationists are hunters. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, the PF members out there that I work with directly, I would say probably 90% of them hunt. And the reason they joined PF was because they had a strong love for the land and for the environment. And so, obviously, as part of our mission, our focus is on improving water quality, preserving soil from erosion, and improving wildlife populations. And we've done a number of things over the past, you know, 10 years to try to bump those curves up and improve all those things. But, you know, the thing I get the most concerned about, obviously, is water quality in Iowa. Our water quality ranks very low in the country. And, you know, part of our solution is if we could just buffer every river, creek, and stream in the state. That would do a great deal to preserve not only our soil, but to improve our water quality across the state. And,
okay. John, we have to take a break now.
Okay.
In about 5 minutes, we'll have more of our conversation about the decline of hunting in Iowa. You're listening to The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Good afternoon. For the rest of the hour, I'm continuing to be joined by Willie Succi, Wildlife Research Supervisor for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and John Lindquist, Western Iowa's Regional Representative for Pheasants Forever. And we'd also like to invite you to the conversation. Have you or someone you know stopped hunting in the past few years? Why? Does it relate to access to land, the expense, the weather? Tell us your story about hunting in Iowa, the decline of hunting in Iowa. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. You can send us an email to theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, and we're on Twitter at IPRTalk. John, right before the break, you were talking about water quality. What continue with what you were talking about there.
Okay. You know, one of the prize programs we have going right now in Iowa for the, you know, bringing back the birds is called Reload Iowa. And that program is designed to basically sell one-on-one with landowners habitat plans for their property. So what we want to do is actually go to their property, take a look at it, come up with a habitat program that would fit their needs, that would improve their bottom line for their production, and give it to them and say, if this is what you want, this is what we can do to help you get that on the landscape using federal programs or using local programs within that county. That requires an army of salesmen and biologists, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So what we started doing was raising $11.5 million to start putting biologists on the landscape that would have one for every two counties. And so far we have five of those young professionals on the ground. They are at the NRCS office, so people can go there and visit with them and take a look at their property. And these guys are very, very sharp. They understand the programs. They understand as a producer you want to improve your bottom line. But more than anything, they understand what we need to do to improve our state's condition. It's been ailing for a little while. And they understand that if we clean up our water, try to eliminate some flooding issues that are going on out there, and I think every Iowan can relate to that right now, save our soils, and a byproduct of that is going to be more upland populations, more pollinators out there for the bees, and, you know, that's a hurting industry too right now. 50% of that industry is gone. So we're trying to improve a lot of different things, but it all starts with water. And Reload Iowa wants to improve that resource, and on the back side of that, you know, we want to fill Main Street. We want to bring people back to the hotels and motels, gas stations, cafes. You know, we want to see the streets in Exira, Iowa, busy on opener. You know, we want every hotel filled. And that's not going to happen until we start taking care of those resources.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very successful so far. It's only been on the ground for about a year.
Mm-hmm. We have plenty of callers and emails. I'm going to get to those in just a second, but I want to ask Willie Succi of the DNR, what are your thoughts on the link between environmentalism and hunters?
You're correct. That's somewhat of a misperception that the general public probably doesn't always understand, is that one of the main motivations or one of the higher motivations for hunting is for people to get back out and connect with nature. And if you think about our history, we used to, as a society, either be agrarian or hunters, and we had that connection. And in our modern society, we've changed where only 5 to 10% of our population are actually connected directly to land. So this is a way for people to get back out and connect to the environment.
We have a call from Craig, and I see Southern Iowa. Craig, welcome to you.
Hey, thank you, and thanks for the topic. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Two quick points. One is the bird numbers. I won't dwell on that one, but clearly the bird numbers are down, and I think a lot of people are heading to Kansas, Minnesota, Nebraska, South Dakota, et cetera, and they were going to see a decline in license sales just because of that. But the other one, is the deer hunting. The state has limited deer hunting numbers, so they're kind of creating a shortage of deer hunters just by some of the policies that are in place, particularly with non-residents. They put a cap on the number of non-residents that are allowed to hunt, and if you take a look at the applications, they far exceed the demand for those hunters, far exceeds the supply of the licenses. And I think, you know, not only are they're kind of boxing out hunters, but they're also foregoing probably millions and millions of revenue. So there's really two things, I think. The bird numbers are certainly hurting the pheasant hunters, but I think there's some opportunity to open up, you know, the state for more deer hunters, given there's a, you know, overpopulation in certain parts of the state, and there's people that want to take care of it.
Thank you for your call. Willie, in Janine Beck's piece at the top of the hour, she talked about how the state legislature has directed the DNR to consider opening more public land for hunting. And while that's a small amount of the land in Iowa, is that an option to open more public land?
There's some opportunities there. For the most part, the land that's suitable to be hunted is probably being hunted. I don't think that we'll be able to gain a whole lot that way.
And in that piece, we also heard about other states are offering incentives to private landowners to open their land. Do you see any motivation for that happening in Iowa?
Actually, we do. We're putting together a proposal. Part of the Farm Bill funding for the next 3 years has a pot of grant money that we can apply for to pilot a program here in Iowa. And so we're going to go forward with that application if we're successful. We hope to have some sort of a program on the ground by 2011 in the fall.
And what would you hope could be the concrete results of that?
Well, what we're hoping to see is something similar to what Nebraska or Kansas has. We're going to focus on habitat, however, and cost-share habitat in exchange for allowing open access to hunting.
Peter writes us an email. He writes, "I am one of the people that has stopped hunting pheasants in the last 2 years. The lack of habitat is destroying the sport. The policies and agenda of the Farm Bureau to increase ag super farms has taken all the weeds, fence rows, etc. off the land. I'm now turning to fall turkey hunting after hunting pheasants since 1968. I want to turn to you, John Lindquist. What do you hear from pheasant hunters out there? Is it a similar experience to what Peter writes about?
I think it's, in a lot of ways, right on. Access absolutely plays into it. I mean, family farms, they're gone from the landscape. A lot of the farms now are larger, and you're not exactly sure who owns it. You know, 30% of the farms are owned by someone who's a non-resident of Iowa, so contacting those people to get access is pretty tough to do. Have these guys switched to another sport? Yeah. Many of them have gone to duck hunting or turkey hunting or, you know, bow hunting deer, whatever it is. They're using resources of the state, but that's why the numbers are dropping off so quickly on pheasant hunters. You know, 85,000 people went out last year and hunted pheasants, and, you know, that's down from 277,000 or 307, you know, from the mid-70s. So there was a lot of people who just, you know, they got away from the sport because of a number of things, but one of it is access and bird numbers. Bird numbers are taking a pretty big hit.
And that's partly due, we've touched on this, but because of the weather.
That has a lot to do with it. Habitat has a lot to do with it. You know, when he was talking about fence rows and, you know, different parts of the landscape being removed for larger ag production, you know, my area where I grew up hunting, there's not a fence row there anymore. There's no terraces. There's no anything. And it's all being, you know, produced right now. So it has definitely affected, you know, our family farm. We farm for, you know, a balance of conservation and grain. And our numbers have gone up drastically just because we're surrounded by ag production and nothing else.
We have a call from Mindy in Iowa City. Hi, Mindy.
Hi. I wanted to talk about what an amazing food resource deer is in Iowa. This is how we feed our family. We butcher at home. We grind our own meat. I think it's just a fantastic way to eat. We don't have to buy, you know, protein at the grocery store at all.
Mm-hmm. Have you and your family been doing this for quite some time?
Actually, no. This is a little bit different situation. I think the decline in the intact and extended family has not passed on the tradition of hunting. And so in our family, it started with us. And just getting educated through the local resources, through the DNR, there's hunter education programs. It's really a fantastic way to feed your family. And economical.
So do you think that there have been more resources available to get you interested in hunting?
I think there is. I think people need to, you know, look into the DNR, look into their local family-owned sporting goods shops. There's wonderful people there that, you know, want to pass on these traditions and teach people, you know, how to do these things.
Well, thank you so much for your call today, Mindy.
You're welcome.
Next, I want to go to Randy. Randy calling from Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi.
One of the ideas I had was that my cousin goes down to around Ottumwa, and he knows an elderly farmer that would like to get rid of some of the brush and stuff. So in the payback, Ed gets to go deer hunting and turkey hunting down there. So if some of these people live in the city want to put a little sweat equity into helping some of these farmers that have, you know, certain situations where you can do some hands-on, they might be a bit more willing to let that individual that they worked with for a day or two or whatever and got to know them, the chance to go deer hunting or turkey hunting.
Mm. Thanks so much for the call. I want to pick up on that point with John Lindquist of Pheasants Forever. What are the kind of deals that maybe somebody who lives in the city would have with a farmer to go hunting? Is it do they just get to go for free, or do they have to pay? What about this this kind of exchange that Randy talks about?
Well, you know, the paying to hunt thing really worries the average sportsman in Iowa, because the last thing you want to do is force your kids to pay for a sport that has been so near and dear to our hearts for years, you know. And that's kind of the balance with non-resident deer hunters. I mean, one of my best friends comes back every year and he hunts with us, and he likes to bow hunt deer, and, you know, that's become more and more difficult in Iowa. And, you know, part of the reason is, we see land in specific areas of the state being leased up by the non-residents, and then it's off the grid for everybody that's local to use. So, you know, it's not that way up where I live in the northern part of the state, but I think the southern part of the state, you know, it affects more directly. So we don't want to encourage, you know, paying to hunt, in my opinion. But what I see working the best is, you know, introducing yourself to the landowner, telling them who you are and where you're from. Sharing some stories and some time. It's never a fast process. Every land producer has a great history and a great story, and obviously we all like to talk. And, you know, if you just take a few minutes extra and build a bond with that person, and then when you're you know, done with that conversation and you go out and experience your hunt, come back and tell them what you saw and what happened, and share with them, and, you know, build that relationship so that possibly the next year you can go on back and hook up with them. Some of the best experiences I've ever had hunting have been out of state where we've done just that, and they'll call us now and say, hey, are you going to come back out hunting this year? And there's nothing in it really for them, but it's a social connection that has kind of left us, you know, and I think they appreciate it.
Mm. I grew up in southern Illinois, and I remember going to my grandparents' house, and they had some really good friends who were farmers. And I can remember my grandparents hunting, but it seems that now, whether it's in Illinois, really any state in the Midwest, the more that people move to the city, the less chances that they're going to know a farmer, know somebody who owns land.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. You know, like I said, 30% of the landowners don't live in Iowa. They're non-resident. So, you know, it takes a lot of time to find those folks and to track them down, and to that extent, it's good to plan ahead. It's good to do the research before you just come on out.
Mm. Lisa in Madrid writes, it's a shame that Iowa's wildlife pays the ultimate price in order to generate revenue for the state. As a non-hunter, I would be glad to pay the equivalent of a hunting license fee to create or preserve habitat on which wildlife could permanently live undisturbed. Safe areas for the birds and animals mean safe areas for wildlife watchers, school groups, researchers, photographers, and naturalists. Let's see if Iowa can get on board the ecotourism bandwagon and show our progressive side. I, for one, am willing to pay to ensure that that happens. Just tell me where to sign up. Willie Succi, I want to get your reaction to this. A non-hunter writing in saying, yes, impose an extra fee on me so that we can preserve land.
I appreciate her comments, and I guess what we don't see eye to eye on is that the things are incompatible. Ecotourism is something that's happening in parts of the state with birding trails, the Kellerton area with prairie chickens, and you know, you can actually have those kind of activities and increase wildlife populations and allow sustainable hunting.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that non-hunters can do?
there's a number of things they can do. If they want to support habitat, they can, you know, buy a habitat stamp or habitat fee. And then we have a chickadee checkoff on the state income tax form where they can donate to the Wildlife Diversity Program, who spend, you know, most of their time and effort on the non-game species.
So has it always been a process where these non-hunters can help, or has that been around for many years?
The habitat spam's been around for close to 40 years, and the checkoff started in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. Next, we have Drew calling from Edieville. Welcome to the program, Drew.
Yeah, and it's Edieville.
Oh, I apologize.
Yes. And I would like to say that I'm in the YHEC team. It's run by the DNR. And we had to turn down some teams this year because there are so many youth out there for the program.
Mm-hmm. Could you please turn down your radio, please?
Yeah.
Thank you. And I want to ask you, we've been talking about the decline in hunting. Is that not something that you're really seeing because you're describing this youth participation?
Well, no, but there are youth out there. There is a decline, but there still are youth out there that are willing to hunt and want to participate.
Mm-hmm. Is it that parents are bringing their youth into these programs? I'm just curious as to how the children are coming to be in these programs.
Well, my boss is also my YHEC coach, and she helped me get into the program. And I found out in 4-H in the shooting program, and I just found that interesting, and I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And this year, I ended up getting third place overall.
Congratulations. So,
go ahead.
What have you learned through the program?
Well, we do a lot of shooting, and we also do, like, we do a safety trail. And, I mean, that's, to me, that's the most important thing, because how our landowners going to let us hunt if we aren't safe.
Well, thank you so much for the call today. That's Drew calling us from Edieville. I want to turn to you, Willie Succi. You mentioned various things that the DNR is doing to encourage hunting. Is there anything else that the DNR is doing or is planning to do to encourage more hunting or have more classes?
Well, I think that's something that we've been looking at and ways to increase it. We try to put on the educational opportunities at Springbrook State Park and some other places, working with Pheasants Forever and other groups, trying to work with Pheasants Forever to get habitat out on the land. This access program is another thing. We're just trying to find ways. I think you've identified one of the key differences between now and when a lot of us grew up hunting was that we had those connections to the rural landowners, and trying to find that social network, social fabric that we can tie our hunters and people from the city back to that is a big challenge. And one caller talked about the meat and protein, and maybe we can, you know, think about hunting in the terms of local production of farm produce and organic farming as a way to encourage people to get into the sport.
Mm-hmm. Given that there has been a decline in hunters, are you concerned, worried about wildlife programs, about funding for those conservation programs?
It's always been a concern. I've worked for the department for 25 years, and I think it's always been a concern of ours when your funding is tied to a certain mechanism that if that thing goes away, you don't know how you would find the you know, especially today's economic situation to do those kind of programs. We, you know, work on trying to recruit people and to try to explain, you know, the benefits of having a hunting license and hunting. And we do respect those that, you know, choose not to hunt, but from a conservation and sustainability point of view, the hunting is a great thing to have.
Mm-hmm. And I want to give the final word to John Lindquist of Pheasants Forever. What are you most hopeful about as we go forward? We've been talking a lot about what's been happening that's been negative about the decline in hunting, but what are you most hopeful about?
Well, there's a lot of great opportunities out there on the horizon for Iowa. One of the biggest and the one that people should think about the most if they want to help is sustainable funding for conservation. And this November 2nd, every Iowan that goes to vote will have the ability to check yes for I Will. And I Will stands for Iowa's Water and Land Legacy. And it's consistent funding for our natural resources. And if we can create a pot of money there that's consistently coming in, that's, you know, of a huge increase, we can do some better things to bring back wildlife, improve our water and our resources all at the same time.
Okay, great. John Lindquist, Western Iowa's regional representative for Pheasants Forever, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Willie Succi, Wildlife Research Supervisor for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, thank you to you.
Well, thank you. You've had a very interesting program.
Thank you. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. And special thanks to Janine Beck for that report at the top of the hour. Technical support comes from Dennis Reese, and the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. If you didn't catch all of today's show and would like to hear more, you can get a podcast of it by going to our website at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Alex Hoyer. Thanks for joining us.